Welcome to The Lorraine Murphy Show. I'm an entrepreneur on my second business, a mentor, an author, wife to a fellow entrepreneur, and mother to a magical little girl. On my podcast, I explore topics that fascinate me that will help you unlock ideas to rise even higher in your life. Myself and my special guests will be talking entrepreneurship and how to build better businesses, organization and figuring out how to get more shit done quicker and smarter, staying in touch with our soul, and how to blend business babies with real babies. Let's jump in to this week's episode. Hello, lovely listener, and welcome to this week's episode of my beautiful podcast, The Lorraine Murphy Show. I am thrilled to have you, and I cannot wait to get stuck into this episode. This is a biggie, and we're talking about a really, really, really important topic this week with my special guest, Libby Quinn. However, before we kick in to our chat, I wanted to share a quick reminder that my Step Into You program closes today. That's Friday, 27th of March. However, I've learned this from lots of experience, I always keep the doors open for a few last minute joiners. So if you're listening to this around the end of March, just jump onto my website as you can still join up for a few more days. Okay, this week's episode is a vitally important one. I've talked a lot about my own mindset challenges over this season, and something that is instrumental for me to be the upbeat, focused and positive person I know I can be is the support of my psychologist. For this season on mindset, I wanted to have a deep and meaningful chat with an expert psychologist who really understands the demographic of the audience of this show. Hello, Dr. Libby Quinn, aka the women's psychologist who has a psychology practice devoted specifically to women. In myself and Libby's chat, we cover why women can need therapy more than men, the three steps she guides her clients on to boost their mindset, the reason that a journaling practice works and how it can help to counteract stress, the early warning signs that we should be getting psychological help soon. And honestly, this is what I wish I had known last year when I was going through my own mindset challenges. How to know if we are or are not coping okay with a curveball or a major life event. Again, would like to have known this last year. The surprisingly common problem of adjustment disorder, what it is and how therapy can help it. The concept of matrescence, and every mother needs to know this. I learned this for the first time in my very first chat with Libby when I first met her at an event last year. And yeah, every woman needs to understand what this is. The importance of the female village and how a lack of it contributes to mental health issues. Loneliness and how it impacts our mindset. Her and also my advice on how to find a great psychologist to support you. So, over to myself and Libby's chat. I so hope you enjoy this one. So hello, Libby. Thank you so much for joining me for this chat. I know already you're going to have so much gold to share with our audience.
Oh, thank you, Lorraine. It is, like I said to you before, just an absolute pleasure to be joining you on this conversation.
And you're also a past Step Into You alumni as well.
I am. You are like my go-to queen for helping me to get shit done and get organized. So that was just, yeah, lovely to be a part of that program and helped me immensely.
And so we obviously met in person at Kylie Camps' event back in August. I think it was August last year.
Yes.
And yeah, I just loved connecting with you. And I know I probably grilled you about your business, which is what I tend to do with people. And I just love what you stand for and what you do in terms of your whole practice is built to support women. You're not the women's psychologist for nothing.
Yes.
So yeah, it's great to be, yeah, I feel like we've had various different connections. It's great to be having you on the show. So thank you so much for being on the show and for being prepared to talk about such a key topic, which is everyone's probably sick of hearing the word about mindset this season. So I think it's really valuable to have you as a psychologist on to talk about it. And yeah, from various different perspectives, which we'll talk about in a second. So for everyone who doesn't know you and isn't the fan already that I am, share a little bit about you, your background and your business and what you stand for.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you said, I'm a clinical psychologist. So I have a Bachelor in Psychological Science with honors. I've also went on to complete a doctorate in clinical psychology. So all up, I think that was 8 years full-time at university. Which has really been worth it. So that's allowed me to work solely in private practice for the past 10 years. And what I've found over those 10 years, I naturally had a lot of women seeking me out. As women, we do tend to seek out therapy more than our male counterparts. And also obviously being a woman myself, you know, I became really aware as I went through these different life stages, different experiences, of just all the, like, the uniqueness of being a woman and the challenges we face. And it was after I had my second son that I went back to work, and I think it was in January 2019, so essentially almost 12 months ago, I founded my now clinic, which is the Women's Psychology Clinic in Northern New South Wales. And that just grew from my immense passion for how amazing we as women are. And that despite all of the phenomenal work women before us have done in terms of paving the way and the feminist movement and all of that, I have witnessed in myself, in friends and family and clients, just how much as women we're still suffering unnecessarily. And so from that, my passion has just grown so much. And really, I have to say my purpose is just to help really educate and encourage women to really optimize their psychological well-being, which if we're doing that, we're able to really live our lives to our fullest and really live the lives that we deserve. So that's me in a nutshell.
I just want to take 90% of what you just said and stick it on a quote on Instagram. So I'm very open about the fact that I work with a psychologist, and so I'm really keen, I guess, to obviously talk to you, but also share a little bit about the
yes,
I've been on and working with the psychologist as well. And it's been, you kind of, I know you follow me, thank you. It's been a really turbulent couple of years for me.
And
who should actually be thinking about therapy? Like, if someone's sitting there listening now, like, how do we know we need therapy? I know that seems like a really stupid question, but how do we know we need help?
Yeah, I think it's a really great question, because it's something that I would have to say 99% of the population have asked themselves of, do I need help? Do I need to go and see someone? And, you know, the full spectrum is right here in terms of, if I use the analogy of a car, which I know has been done to death, but I like it because it kind of covers all bases. So if we think about our car, ideally we want to be servicing that quarterly, or, you know, if it's every 3 to 4 months, however often that is. And that's just to ensure the smooth running of our car. And we need to do that to ensure that it does keep running effectively. So for some individuals, there's people out there that maybe they're going okay and they're like, oh, I don't know where my mind's at. You know, maybe it might be worthwhile to check in with someone objective to my situation, see where my mind's at to ensure I can keep running effectively. So there's that portion of the population, which I would say, again, therapy tends to be at the bottom of the list for many of us. But there is that portion where I think it's really important. I really encourage individuals to, every one of us should go and speak to a psychologist or a therapist or counselor to get that objective feedback about where our minds are at. The second step in the car analogy is, you know, when we start to feel that the car's making a funny noise or there's a bit of a rattle and we kind of notice that, and then it disappears for a bit. And then the next week it might be back again. And our minds are no different, or our psychological well-being, where there might be certain stresses in our life which start to kind of put pressure on us, and we might have this kind of rise in symptoms, so to speak, so difficulty sleeping, more catastrophic thinking or heart palpitations, but then it might disappear for a bit. And it's in those moments that we're not feeling great that we're like, oh, maybe I should speak to someone. But then it passes and we go, oh, I'm okay. I won't seek out that help. And I would say that this is the key point when we start to hear the sounds that aren't right, the car shaking a little bit, it's a bit harder to get the engine started, that we really actually need to seek help at this point.
Yeah,
because we don't want to end up in the third part of my car story, which is where the car breaks down.
Yeah.
Or the car doesn't start.
Yeah.
Or we need to get towed to the mechanic.
Yeah. Which is effectively, you know, I've heard that analogy before. I think it's really powerful. That's really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah. So, I mean, essentially in all of that, in answer to your question, it's just, I think we all can benefit from therapy, but the key time where we're going to get the most benefit is when we start to notice that, there's the rakes and there's the noises and things are just not working too well within us. We're not our usual selves. Mm-hmm. And we can delve into that a little bit soon, but just certain symptoms start to pick up that we go, I should speak to someone objective to my situation.
Yeah, that's so good. Thank you. So for me, I think for me, if I kind of go back to kind of maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and I had a business coach, first of all, that was kind of, I had a life coach, first of all, like a health coach.
Yes.
We were into my first business because I could feel myself burning out. Actually, funny enough, she's coming along to my Bali retreat. She's running the whole, she's got on a whole amazing journey of meditation and yoga. And
fantastic.
She's actually going to be my soul guide for Bali in May. But anyway, so I started working with her. Then I started working with a business coach about 18 months into my first business. And myself and Wade have been seeing a relationship counselor for, I'd say about 4 or 5 years. Kind of, we go through kind of bursts of seeing her on and off every year or two. So I know, for example, when we wanted to get pregnant, it took us 18 months to get pregnant. And in that time, Wade had started his own business. Like, we were starting to kind of, flounder a little as a couple. Mm. And we went to see someone, and we still see that person today. But if, for me, and I actually don't think, and this is why I really want to ask this question. I think a lot of people think, if we think about like relationship counseling, first of all, that, oh, that's what you do when you're about to divorce or you're already divorcing. Rather than seeing it as almost like preemptive, like, oh, things aren't great. If we continued on this track for another 10 years, then okay, yeah, things aren't going to look very good. But I think for me, one of my best friends and her husband had been to relationship counseling, and you know, I would look at them and go, I still do, they've got an incredible relationship. And for her to say that they had been to counseling it almost normalized it for me. Does that make sense? And it wasn't like the taboo thing of like, oh, you're going to couples counseling, you must be about to break up. So I think that on one side really helped, knowing that friends of ours have been to relationship counseling, and that's why we have done that for a few years now. But then on the other side of it, then I'd never been to a psychologist or to therapy. You know, I'd never really paid for that kind of thing. But then I read a book called All I Know About Love by a lady called Dolly Alderton. She's actually a UK journalist and then wrote this book. It's just the most incredible book. I loved it. And she talked about her therapy journey and how much it had helped her. And I actually read it when I was in Bali with Lexi just after I'd sold my first business. And for the first time I went, oh, maybe I could actually go see someone. I didn't think like anything was bad or kind of, I was probably like the first person in the car, what you're talking about there.
Yes.
And I started working when we actually came back from Bali and moved to the Gold Coast, I found a psychologist there and started working with her. I was incredibly lonely up there. Like, looking back, I can see that I was clearly depressed up there. So, and then moved back to Sydney, and then I started working again with a psychologist last April. But the reason I guess I'm telling you this long story is I think it's really important for us to normalize the idea of going to see someone. And obviously this season is all about mindset and the power of our mindset. And that's why I was really keen to interview you as part of this. It's almost like one of the perspectives that I present as part of the season, because I do think having a really strong person in your corner when it comes to supporting your mindset from a professional perspective, I think for many of us is a really, really good thing. So do you find that with the people who seek you out, like, have they been through like a bit of a, should I be doing this? Is this normal? What will people think? Like, is that normal that people will go through that thought process?
Absolutely. I think, exactly like your own experience, it's a really common experience. Unfortunately, going to therapy, particularly in Australia still has a bit of a stigma attached to it in terms of, and I think that comes down to, you know, the history of psychology and therapy. It has its origins in pathology, which means, you know, it's very much been associated, and what it was born out of was mental illness, so to speak. So a lot of negative language around there's something wrong with you, which is therefore why you need to go to therapy. Now, what we've thankfully seen in more recent years in research and training in psychology is a big shift towards an inclusion of positive psychology, which is really, really evidence-based. And I would say, you know, psychologists trained in the past 15 to 20 years practice from this approach, where it's really about, helping people to process any past traumas and hurts, but also a lot on skill building and resilience building and optimizing their well-being. So there's been a lot of changes, but I think there's still this almost like residual stigma that still sits there for people. So there is, unfortunately, I think I definitely witness in my patients and friends and other people who will disclose it to me because I am a psychologist, where they'll almost express a bit of shame.
Yes, that they're the words that come to mind, like shame and also embarrassment.
Yeah. And I think exactly what you said, and I'm a huge proponent of it, and I have spoken openly about it myself before, but I've seen a psychologist many times. You know, my husband and I have had relationship counseling at different points in our relationship, and I think the more we have people in influential positions talking about, and you know, it doesn't have to be in detail, just opening up their very human side of themselves to say, yes, I've been to therapy and it's great for looking after ourselves, then we help other people to give permission to themselves for that.
Yes, I love that. This may seem like a strange question, maybe it doesn't. Do you feel like is there a certain kind of personality type that needs therapy more than others?
That's a good question. I would say...
I'll actually explain that a little bit more why I'm asking that. So if I look at myself, like I'm quite highly strong. I'm highly imaginative. I've got a very active imagination, active brain. So, and you know, if I look back at like my family of origin, is that the right term? Like my
family,
I'm definitely one of the more highly strong of our family. Whereas my dad and my sister are very, very calm, very centered, very grounded people, like incredibly grounded people. And if I look at Wade, you know, and Wade has his own history, which, you know, that's for him to start his own podcast and talk about. But I feel like, again, I really need to go talk to someone quite regularly. Like it's a really important part of optimizing my mindset.
Yes.
Like Wade is more about, well, just truck on, just keep going. I'll just get it.
Yes.
So do you feel, and maybe it's a male-female thing, like do you have any perception that is like there's certain people that just seem to need therapy more than others?
I would say there's, you know, kind of what you're saying there in some respects, it's almost like that combination between if we're wired with a bit of a sensitive temperament and then...
Thank you.
and then we've got... Sorry. And then if we've had some, you know, just if we've got a sensitive temperament, if we are a bit of an introvert at times or we're a bit of a thinker, you know, then that means our minds can get carried away. With us. And there's certainly individuals out there that are not wired that way. You know, I would have to say I've got a similar dynamic in my relationship. I'm quite the thinker. Definitely benefit from therapy. And my husband is naturally a lot more grounded and he'll go for a bike ride and he's good.
Yes.
I think there's certain individuals, those of us who might be just, a bit more sensitively wired. And then if there's been certain experiences on top of that, where therapy can be really useful and absolutely it's not for everyone.
And that's not to say that, you know, Wade would be averse to going and talking to someone that he has done in the past, but it just doesn't seem to be like a core pillar for him like it would be for me, you know?
Yes. Yeah. And I think within that too, you know, we know that as women we're a little bit stronger in the social emotional aspect, which means we do tend to navigate through things by talking and reflecting a lot more.
That's such a good point that you've made, Libby, because I know it's called talk therapy, but very often, even if I'm doing an Instagram story or I'm recording a podcast or I'm chatting to Wade about something or whatever I'm doing, it's almost like by me actively speaking that I join the dots on something and not even a problem or an issue, it's just I don't think men are wired like that. I don't feel like men need to talk through things in order to figure them out. I think women do. It's almost like it's like a genetic thing. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think there can definitely be those sex differences. And, you know, at the same time, I think sometimes, and I think that, we can see men that might, there's the other issue where men don't seek help and they might benefit from it because they can kind of get stuck in their ways and say, no, I'm okay. I don't need to talk about it. That's not what I do. But, you know, often times that when men do seek therapy and they have that experience of just freely expressing without judgment and being able to get some feedback, given it's the right therapeutic approach, it can open up a whole new way of developing coping strategies for them that maybe they haven't had previously.
Maybe on that, I mean, it's the very sad and devastating part of that is, you know, we see a lot more men taking their own lives than women. It's like men kind of carry the burden on their own and don't feel like there's anyone to talk to, which is heartbreaking when you know there's so many professionals like you out there who can support and help.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the advantage that as women we have is because we are naturally a little stronger in that social, emotional kind of vulnerable side of ourselves. You know, we often will have deeper conversations with girlfriends that then lends itself to being more open to seeking therapeutic help. And for men, you know, that is changing, but they probably still tend to hold on to the archaic belief of, you know, kind of what you said before of she'll be right and I'll carry on and I can cope in that way. So yeah, I think it's something that women definitely might find easier to access.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes total sense. And there's another question just popped up, but I'll ask you in a few minutes. Sorry, it's been popped up in my own head. So I'd love to talk to you about something. So obviously this season is all about mindset and the biggest reason, obviously I think you're amazing, but also the biggest reason about asking you on the show to talk about mindset is how does what part does a psychologist have to play in terms of helping people support their mindset? So if I was to ask you, if a client is struggling with their mindset, what are three practices or tips that you will, and I know it's very hard to prescribe for, you know, en masse, but what are the three things that you would generally recommend to someone that they do in terms of managing their own life or their own energy to help them with their own mindset?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I would say I probably tend to go initially to firstly helping individuals to acknowledge that they have a relationship with themselves. And that can sound a bit odd to some people, but we will frequently nurture, particularly as women, other relationships in our lives. So we'll nurture the relationship with our children, with our friends, family of origin, our partners. And we actually don't give much thought to the relationship we have with ourselves, particularly one surrounding inner dialogue. So we can kind of have, you know, past tapes, past conditioning, so to speak, playing automatically in our mind. And if we don't gain self-awareness or self-reflection on what's going on there, then those tapes with those thoughts that are coming from old patterning can just keep playing. So the first step I try to encourage all my clients to do is to start with acknowledging they have a relationship with themselves, engaging in some self-awareness or self-reflection. And essentially it's also being able to meet themselves where they are, which is about being able to validate whatever your experience is right now. So for someone that might be feeling depressed or feeling overwhelmed or they feel their relationship is falling apart, to just meet yourself there and say, okay, I'm feeling like shit because this is going on and this is okay. Too often we try to suppress emotion or push forward too quick without just sitting where we are. And that's really important as an initial step. And when we offer ourselves the practice of self-compassion, which is talking to ourselves in a kind and encouraging, supportive way, the same way we would to a friend, we know that that facilitates more psychological ease. It is so evidence-based that self-compassion is the foundation of self-belief, and self-belief is everything.
Yeah, love. And, you know, self-belief is mindset. There's so many different mindset, but self-belief is a huge part of that. So when that first piece about building a relationship with yourself, what practices, like if I was to say, yes, that's something I'm devoting, I know it's a daily thing, an all-day thing, but if I was to devote like 10, 15 minutes to purely 100% focusing that a day, what would that look like?
Yeah, I would say it can start with the practical strategy of just if you're able to start your day with a journal, and I'm a big fan of just dot points, or even if it's the notes section in your phone, to just, you know, check in with yourself where you are on that morning and ask yourself, what are your intentions for the day? And a big part of what I try to encourage clients to do is to really come to know this fact, it's a fact, that we're not our thoughts. So the more that we can actually put thoughts down on paper, it helps to create this separateness and allows us to develop what we call our observer mind.
Ah, so yes.
Yeah. So I'm a big fan of that practical strategy of just putting pen to paper sometimes, of just getting it out of our mind so we can go, okay, that's my thoughts. I'm separate to my thoughts. Does it serve me to listen to these thoughts or believe them? Or can I see them as a bunch of words that my mind has created because of past experiences and effectively let those thoughts go? And that strategy is what we call thought diffusion. It's the ability to acknowledge that our thoughts are separate to us and we can't stop thoughts coming up in our mind, but we do get to choose whether we listen to or believe a thought mm-hmm. or whether we let that go.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm actually writing that down, thought diffusion. That before. Genius. I love it.
So that's taken from acceptance and commitment therapy, which a lot of psychologists in these days tend to practice from that approach.
Yeah, that's really clever. Okay, I love it. And it's just, yeah, it's very visual as well. I love that.
Yes. That's powerful. Yeah.
I'm assuming that the people who come to you, pretty much everyone is experiencing some kind of challenge with their mindset, yeah, if they're actually specifically seeking out a psychologist.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And yeah. There's a really good analogy, and myself and Wade actually use this a lot when we're talking about business and life, everything. There's the analogy of a frog slowly boiling in water where, you know, frog, if it's chucked into boiling water, it's going to jump straight back out again. But yes. If you put it into cold water and just gradually, degree by degree, increase the temperature, the poor frog will die because it doesn't realize that it's actually in boiling water. It's a horrific analogy, I know. But we don't, and for me, if I apply that to the whole field of mindset, the space, we don't realize that there's a problem until there's really a problem and we really hit a wall. And I think for me last year, looking at, and sorry, people are probably sick to death of me listening to this season and talking about, you know, the last couple of years, but that's why it's, the last couple of years is why I knew I needed to devote an entire season to the topic of mindset because it's, you know, it's been such a challenging space for me over the last 2 years. And thankfully now, you know, fingers crossed, touch wood, I'm at the other side of it, that I really want to delve into what happened for me and hopefully share some of the learnings that I've had as a result of that. But I know I was seeing a psychologist last year and trying to, I guess, build in that support. And then things just, the wheels came off at home, the wheels came off at work. And in a really spectacular way. And I hit a wall where there's one Saturday, which I never want to experience again. And my friend Sarah came over and pretty much scooped me off the floor. So, you know, I definitely hit the wall and it was a wake up call to me. And I think to Wade as well, because I think Wade is like, she's fine. She's okay. She'll get through this. She's resilient. She's tough. All this, you know, soldier mentality almost. And I really wasn't okay. And I think that made us both realize how un-okay I was, which kicked into action then a healing plan over the last, well, September, October, November, five months now. That happened. And I do feel like I'm at the other side of it. But, you know, if I was to kind of go back to Lorraine then, or if you're looking at your, do you say clients or patients?
I say clients, yes. I did say patients before, but we tend to refer to them as clients, yes.
Yeah. So with your clients, like if or, you know, if you're at a barbecue and I would imagine everyone spills all their trauma onto you sitting in a barbecue chatting to you over a glass of rosé. So what do you think if someone's listening and they're like, oh, you know, am I okay? Am I not? What, from your perspective as a trained psychologist, what are the three warning signs that would indicate to you that the water's about to boil? Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. And I think you're spot on with what you're talking about with the, you know, gradually heating up that water for the poor frog is that, you know, the biggest precipitating kind of lead up to our mental health not working too well is essentially stress and overwhelm. And that's where it can just be this, you know, it's one thing's not working or we're not getting enough sleep or the kids aren't great or something happens in the business, that all of that just starts to build up. And before we know it, like it feels like it's come out of left field, so to speak. So early warning signs, I would say, is if you're noticing that there's more negative or catastrophic or worrying thinking that's happening in your mind. So for a lot of people, and it can be described in different ways, but it's that sense of overwhelm or stress. I think stress is a huge precipitant of depression and anxiety. So if you're starting to notice, oh, okay, this stress didn't last a day or a week, it's ongoing and it's building, that is a huge warning sign to seek help. So just kind of that really busy mind.
Going away.
Sorry?
that it's becoming chronic almost, that it just doesn't seem to be going away.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And pretty quickly following that, you know, we'll see what we call anhedonia, which is the loss of joy in previously enjoyed activities. So, you know, it's when you start, it's fair enough, we all have our off days and even off weeks, and particularly as women, we go with the rise and fall of our menstrual cycles as well. So that can affect us too. But it's when it's happening more times than not that you're going, actually, I don't feel like going out for a run or my yoga class, or I don't want to catch up with my friends. Like when that's building up, and when even you go and do those things and you're like, yeah, that really didn't hit the spot for me. Yeah. That's time to seek help. If there's teariness that's starting to creep in more times than not.
Yeah.
Or a stronger like physiological arousal. So if you're noticing that your heart's racing or you've just got that quicker breathing, difficulty sleeping. So that's probably the third one, is just any disruption to your appetite, sleep, socializing, your daily habits. Which is kind of outside of that bandwidth of your own norm, so to speak.
It's so good you say that, Libby, because I think lack of sleep almost becomes a bit of a competitive sport. And I think especially kids, you know, it's like I had a little sleep. And I used to joke about this back in entrepreneur, like obviously I'm still an entrepreneur, but back when I was kind of just getting into the startup scene, and we used to joke about it, that, oh, you know, and I have to say I was never one of those people, because I didn't think I functioned on sleep, and then I realized when I had sleep, oh my God, I actually can. but I think this sleep thing, if I was to actually look back at me last year, I feel like my sleep wasn't good from February. And I think like I blamed it on a lot of things, like, oh, Lexi was awake, or Wade's getting up at 5 to 5 every morning and I'm not getting back to sleep, and all these different things. But I feel like for me, if I was to go back and say what was the first kind of the smoking gun or whatever you say, I think sleep would have been a big one. So I'm really glad you said that, because, and you know, it's funny, isn't it, with sleep then, because it becomes a vicious cycle, because you're not sleeping because your mindset isn't, you know, you're not in a great place psychologically, which is affecting your sleep. But then the less sleep and the more tired you get, the worse your symptoms of verticomas become.
So it's absolutely.
#22, but I do, from my own experience, I do think definitely that the sleep thing, that was like the slow build, that was the frog starting to boil, I think.
Yes. It's coming just back to those basics of the foundations of what supports us physically in psychology. And we all can do some eye rolls at, oh, yeah, nutrition or movement or socializing or sleeping. But
yeah,
but all of it is, it's critical, you know, that's at the bottom of Maslow's kind of hierarchy of needs, is adequate safety, sleep, nutrition. And if we're not meeting those needs, then our mental health will suffer, because it all affects our nervous system. So, and that's what happens with what you're talking about there, you know, that kind of tired but wired approach, where we're not getting enough sleep, our mind's really active, and then our adrenaline and cortisol jacks up, and that vicious cycle just keeps perpetuating. Or for some other individuals, they start to sleep too much. They find it really hard to get up in the morning. Mm. And then that affects their cognitive thinking, where they start to go, oh, I'm worthless because I can't get up anymore. And because they're having those thoughts, they feel worse, which exacerbates the problem. Mm. So our being self-aware, again, really helps with this, of just being able to go, what are the habits that support me? And when they start to slip a little bit outside of my range of normal, then I need to be concerned if that's going on, you know, longer than a few weeks ultimately.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So Libby, with life, like, we can pretty much guarantee, like, the one thing we can guarantee is change. Like, things are going to change. We're going to lose the job, or the boyfriend's going to break up with us, or we're going to get, just change, and not just negative change, but, you know, positive change, like, oh, we're pregnant, or we're buying a house, or whatever's happening. And sometimes, and I know this is something that really contributed to kind of me ending up in the heap that I ended up in late last year, was there was some curveballs that I just wasn't expecting. And I guess I've got a few different questions for you on this. Is one, how do we know that we're coping okay with a curveball? Because it's natural to be, I know for me, two curveballs, we're losing two babies last year, which was, that was never in my kind of my story for my life ever. And I'm still kind of in a way going, shit, that actually happened. It's crazy. So how, and we expect to be upset or, you know, surprised or shocked, or maybe it's the death of a loved one, whatever it might be. How do we know that we're coping okay? Like, how do we, I guess what I'm saying is, how do we know if what we're experiencing is beyond the realm of what you as a psychologist say, oh, that's normal, you're okay, you're just working through a bad situation? Does that make sense, what I'm asking you?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And I think it has to do with it's an individual experience in some respects as to what each person's limits might be. Mm-hmm. And that's a tricky thing to sometimes self-assess. And that's where time can be a good indicator. So generally, if our mood is lower beyond 2 weeks, like if it's not having any peaks within a two-week period, and I would say even if you stretch that to 3 weeks, then it would be useful to seek help at that point. Mm-hmm. But also it's if you're feeling as though you don't have adequate support around you. So exactly like what you say, there's lots of things that happen in life that we don't predict. But the biggest concern I have for individuals is when they don't have adequate support around them. So, you know, if you don't have a partner or friends or other means of just connecting with people to express, or if you don't have other ways of expressing your emotions, then it means it's going to be a lot harder to cope in that period of time. Mm. But yeah, I would say it comes back to time, that if it's going beyond a certain time limit where there's no, like, we'll definitely have ups and downs, but if there are no ups and you feel like you're actually falling deeper and deeper down the hole, then yeah, it's time to seek help at that point. And there's, within psychology and particularly in Australia, you can receive rebated sessions under Medicare for what we call adjustment disorder. So all of us classify for adjustment disorder when our moods are affected by a significant life stressor that's happened. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't mean that we meet criteria for a depressive episode or for anxiety as such. And this, I think, I see a lot of people who fall into this category and benefit from therapy, because again, if you think prevention is so much better than cure, that if we can get on top of a difficult life stressor and we need some extra assistance beyond what family or friends or our own daily habits can support us, then seeking out professional help early on, you're going to move through that with more ease, essentially, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And you know what you're saying, for me last year, and this is what my psychologist Fiona articulated for me, she said it seems like a lot of the pillars that you depended on for a long time aren't there at the moment. So I had a major financial shock 2 years ago.
Yes.
Where an advisor that I'd engaged to advise me in my first business back in 2015 had given us dodgy advice. And the agent took a few years to catch up with what this company was doing. And I got a bill for six figures from the ATO. Mm. So it was like there was money, there was challenges on the money front. With my business, I was still adjusting to not owning my first business. Like, that was a really big, I was actually talking to Jack DeLosa, who was the interviewee, just before I spoke to you. I don't know where it's landing, if you guys have already heard it or not. But, I can't remember the schedule off the top of my head. But yeah, there was a huge adjustment. My business had been such a huge part of my life. Like, that was my first baby for 5.5 years. And then not only did I have my first actual human baby within 6 months, then I sold the business baby. So there was a lot of pillars that I had really relied on over the years that were no longer there. So one of them being financial security. I would have said up until that point in my life, I'd always been very financially secure. Not to say that I had like tens and tens and thousands and thousands of dollars just floating around in the ether, but there was always I had a certain amount of money there that made me feel secure. Wade was like fully in startup, he kind of still is, but he was 3 years into his business. It almost went under. So there was just challenges on, I felt like, every single front. And the way Fiona articulated was that, you know, all those pillars that you used to rely on crumbled, like for whatever reason, each of them crumbled, and you're left, not to your own devices, but you're left quite exposed, I think is the word that I would say for how I feel. So I think you're so right to articulate those, the broader, I guess, what am I saying? The broader tapestry of support that we have in our lives as well. And I would just say, just given my experience, and I know Wade won't mind me saying this, that you can be in a relationship and also feel like you're not getting much support because that person has so much going on their own plate. Oh. They're just not in a position to support you, you know?
Absolutely. So I would just absolutely. Say
that as well, because I think we do assume that, oh, they've got a partner, they're probably fine, but actually mm-hmm. maybe partner, for whatever reason, doesn't have the capacity to support that person at any one time. So I would also say that if you've got a friend who you think might be struggling somewhat, it's mm-hmm. not to say that the partner's probably got it all gripped up, because the partner may not.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I think I'm a huge proponent of it's not our partner's job to be our therapist. So absolutely, like a partner can be there to support and offer validation, which again, if the stress is minimal, that could be effective enough. But like what you're saying, if they've got too much going on, they can't even offer that. Mm-hmm. But more times than not, our stress goes beyond that we do need external support. Generally professional support to assist us in that time. Yeah,
so true. So what, and this is purely me being kind of being curious, what is the biggest challenge? I remember actually asking you this when I at Kylie's event last year. What is the overarching challenge that women come to you with, the biggest challenge they're having with their mindset in that time that they sought you out?
That's such a great question. Yeah, I would say I tend to work with a lot of women who, they're obviously coming because their mood has dropped down or they're feeling quite anxious. And a lot of that has been precipitated by a strong sense of overwhelm or stress. Mm-hmm. There's also relationship difficulties that come up. And another big one is kind of body image concerns or disordered eating. And I tend to work with, I don't know why it's the case necessarily, but I have a lot of women who are mothers that have come to seek me out, which is just an absolute joy for me, obviously being a mother myself and having moved through postnatal depression and anxiety myself too and undertaken extra training. I'm super passionate about helping mothers move through this really transformative experience from becoming woman to mother and kind of navigating that path, which I think we had that discussion of the term called nartrescence.
Yeah, can you explain what that is? Because that just gave me language for something I'd never been able to explain before.
Yes, yeah, nartrescence is essentially about, it's a key term to describe this process that we go through as women, much like adolescence when we're moving from child to adult, where nartrescence is when we're moving from a sole woman, essentially, even if we are partnered up, we don't have any dependence, mm-hmm. Moving into, being a mother. And that there's, with that, there is huge hormonal shifts. There's a huge shift in identity, which is very similar to adolescence. And we're trying to really navigate that. We're wanting to cling on to parts of us from the past. We have mixed emotions around, regretting things or wanting things from the past in our current experience and needing to mourn and grieve those, but also trying to figure out, okay, I love my child and I want to take care of them as best I can and optimize their well-being, but what about me? Mm. And something I tend to work with a lot of individuals is helping them, and I carry out assessments around understanding their own core beliefs. Mm-hmm. And that essentially comes from our early childhood experiences, the messages we received around how we received love, so to speak, how we learnt about ourselves in the world, and we carry those core beliefs into adulthood, and we often strongly identify with them, believe them to be true, and that's who we are. And for women, I consistently come up with the core beliefs of self-sacrificing.
Yes, that's the first one I thought of when you said that. Yeah.
Self-sacrificing and perfectionism. And I would have to say, a strong percentage of the women I see, and myself included, you know, have those two primary core beliefs. And it's just, understandably, it sets the tone for patterns that may not enable us to look after ourselves or to get stuck. Mm. So they're kind of, key issues that tend to come up with the women that I work with. So a lot of the work we then do is trying to uncover those patterns, noticing where that's coming up in their lives, and really empowering women and educating women on new skills to allow them to live a life that's more in line with their values, which assists them to really look after themselves.
Yeah, I love that. And interesting, just going back to that adjustment disorder, because I hadn't actually heard before, is becoming a mother one of the big triggers for that adjustment disorder that you mentioned before?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you think of any big life change, and I think becoming a mother is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, life changes we can go through. And that's why we're getting there gradually as a society and the mental health support, but there needs to be a lot more support around a mother's psychological well-being and that adjustment in that period, because we know that if there is enough of a focus on a mother and how she's going psychologically, it can help to put in place protective factors so that she doesn't go down the path of postnatal depression or anxiety. But there's been not enough of a focus on that, and women carrying this self-sacrificing core belief, the perfectionism core belief, where they just kind of troop on and say, it's okay, it's about the baby, I'm just going to carry on, and they just fall further and further down that hole. So, yeah, adjustment disorder, you know, I think absolutely many women could meet the criteria for that in that adjustment to motherhood.
God, it's fascinating and also absolutely heartbreaking.
Yeah.
So just all I said, I think we may have already touched on this. Do you think women are actually more susceptible to mindset and mental health issues than men?
Yeah, I do think that that's a really good question. It's hard to say. I would say that it potentially could be equal, although I would say, and being a bit of a feminist myself and still seeing that there needs to be a lot more work for women in the world, I would say women are, and we know this, are carrying more of a mental load, particularly mothers. So if you think about that, as far as what I was saying before about stress and overwhelm being huge precipitants for mental health concerns, there are a lot of women walking around with huge amounts of stress and overwhelm, trying to do it all, trying to keep that brave face, and we're all so at risk of our mental health not being well, ultimately. Yeah.
I had my two cents in there, and clearly as a completely unqualified person, but I actually think women, and also tapping into my experience, I believe that women have the capacity to be absolutely fine if they've got a strong support of women around them.
And
if we go back to and when I say back to our villages, I'm not even talking tribal times. I'm talking like 50 years, 60 years ago. Like,
yes,
I shouldn't be living on the other side of the world from my sister and my aunts and my mom and and I'm very happy to be here, and I don't get homesick. But I do think women have become increasingly isolated to what they used to be. And I think, and I've never actually, it's funny, this is exactly what we're saying, that women connect the dots as they're speaking. I think when women go out to work, I know we work with other women and we may work with other men, but I think I guess what I'm saying is, if we go back 100 years, 150 years, you and I would have been at home looking after the kids. We'd be taking in the neighbor's kids for a couple of hours so the neighbor can go look after her ailing grandmother. We'd be doing a lot of stuff with other women. I think a lot more co-raising of the kids together because the men were at work. So I think if we're going to work, and for me on Mondays, like we're recording this interview on Monday, and I'm sitting at home on my own working, like this is my creative time and I love it, but I do get to Tuesday morning and I'm like, I'm itching to actually spend time with women, because I've spent most of the weekend with Wade,
yes,
which is lovely, but I think I remember when Lexie was 6 months old, we were in Melbourne and I'd just gotten word about this massive ATO thing, and I was observing a friend of mine, we stayed with friends, so he's got a very successful business and she's kind of like the one who keeps the whole home front ticking along beautifully. And she had two lengthy conversations with aunts over the phone. She was catching up with her sister later on. She had a girlfriend, two girlfriends coming over to join us for dinner that night. Like her feminine support pillars were so rich. And I remember looking at her feeling so envious of how much support she had. And not to say that they were there to come and help her, but just that day-to-day stuff that women do so beautifully, like cooking together, talking together, taking care of babies together. Like if I go back home into Ireland and I hang out with my sister, like we cook together, we take our walks together. It's it's really lovely. Whereas I feel like so much of my friendships now are centered around, okay, we're going to go for dinner on Wednesday night. Or let's have coffee and go for a walk or whatever it is. So this has all just come to me as I'm talking to you. And I'm just wondering, do you think that that might be an element of women feeling, you know, like definitely challenged mindset wise and potentially having some bigger mental health issues as well, that kind of lack of.
Oh, absolutely, Lorraine. I think it's been a huge shift in that level of support, exactly what you're saying, that in previous years, women had more women around them and more family, and that offered a huge amount of support as to women, particularly in the mothering role. And now today, you know, and it's a benefit of the feminist movement, but it's also, I think, creating some harm, is that we can do so much and we try to do so much, but we try to do so much with little to none support. And, you know, we're expecting ourselves to go, well, why aren't I handling this? I should be able to handle this. I look at, you know, Mary across the street and she's always smiling and she's got her two kids, and, you know, we get this sense that we should be able to cope with a very demanding job of raising children, even with a very supportive partner. We get this false idea that we should all be coping really well with that, where I don't think we were ever intended to do it in the isolated way that we do it today. And I think that is huge for mental health concerns.
It's funny, that just came to me as we were talking. And if I think about it, it's not even in terms of support, like someone to take the kids for a couple of hours. It's just someone to hang out with and spend time with. Rest with, you know, you might not even have to pull the world apart and solve all your problems, but just someone to hang out and chat with and make you feel normal. It's funny, we're talking about this and I can so see how that would have contributed for me over the last couple of years.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, we're social beings. We need that social connection. And I didn't acknowledge that before, but it's a huge part of our psychological well-being to connect with other people consistently. And particularly for women, it's important for us to be able to connect with other women. And I know for myself, when I experienced postnatal depression after my second boy, I live in a very small community close to the beach and have thankfully developed over the years a really amazing circle of mum friends, and it saved me. It absolutely saved me in terms of just, I could go to the creek and there would be my friends there and we could consistently catch up, and sometimes I didn't even need to say anything, but just being in their company and they got it.
They knew what you were going through.
Absolutely,
still seen regardless of what's going on. That's so special.
So I appreciate that. That's actually a rarity for many women to have, close support that you can frequently access. And I think this is where today women have potentially developed a bit of a false belief that they should, again, it's a should, of I should be able to cope with this. And I'm a firm believer that we're not meant to do it on our own. And that's where if we can access the benefit of nannies or really great daycare providers or babysitters, or, you know, just kind of expanding our support network to help us mother, so to speak, it's essential to our well-being.
And, you know, I think the important thing we need to talk about as part of this conversation is social media, because we think we're connected with people because we're on Instagram every night, and, you know, even someone like me, they're asking me questions and I'm answering them, or, you know, we feel like we are part of something, which we are. But I know Constance Hall talked about this, and I put it into, it's a quote that I put into my Baby Remarkable book, is that women's worlds have been reduced to four walls and an iPhone, because we feel like we're getting that connection, but it's almost like drinking a fizzy drink. You know, we're drinking it, we feel like we're getting hit, but we're not actually getting any substantial benefit from the interaction on Instagram. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. And it's a byproduct of kind of the modern world, to speak. And that's where I really encourage women, as much as they can, to try and connect with what might interest them. You know, if it's going to the gym and starting up a conversation with another woman next to them, or whatever it might be, to actually, and I think you said it at Kylie's talk and it's stuck with me, and I'm a huge proponent of it, of that 20 seconds of brave.
Yeah, of, just 20 seconds of insane courage.
Yes, absolutely. Of just being able to start that conversation. And that's how I've formed a lot of my now adult friendships, is just by taking that step, because absolutely, social media cannot compare to what we get from a physical conversation and interaction with someone where we are seen and heard, and that's essential to our well-being.
It really is. And it's funny we talk about this because last year, oh my God, it's almost 2 years ago, Leila's one of my Instamates, and we were on the Gold Coast when we kind of, they're little girls, a month younger than Lexi. So we were both pregnant at the same time. She started following me and I started following her and we were pregnant. And when we were moving back from the Gold Coast, we were looking at moving to Rozelle, which is where she was living, she still is living. And I reached out and we ended up having like a coffee and play date with the girls, and she's gone to be a really, really great friend. And then last year, a lady came up to me at my yoga studio and said, "Oh my God, you're Lorraine, I've been following you." And we struck up a conversation, we had a cup of tea after that, and now we walk every Tuesday morning. We go walk together, and it's just so nice just to walk with another woman and have a chat. And there's no pretense, and I don't feel like I'm someone that pretends anyway, but it's just a chance just to be normal and hang out and just do fucking normal what women used to do. Talk and, you know, hang out together rather than feeling that everything needs to be scheduled to the nth degree. And actually, I just want to say that as well around this building the female village, because it's been a big focus for me since we moved back from the Gold Coast. And I'm now with this crew of, actually, Stacey, the Instamate, I've just joined her into the village ladies. So she's coming to her first village ladies dinner on Wednesday night, which is really exciting. But something that I decided this year is like, I feel I don't see friends, and particularly even our village ladies, there's five of us, now six of us, that we won't catch up for dinner for like 3-4 months because no one has the time to actually sit down and work out, okay, where are we going? Who's no one's going to coordinate all the avails and non-avails. So I said to the group, and we've got a group WhatsApp chat at the start of the year, and I just said, guys, can we just say the first Wednesday of every month we have village ladies dinner, and if someone's available, they are. If someone can't make it, if there's only two people, then two people catch up, or if no one can make it, then we just don't do it that month. But just to have something in, because it just takes all that, the mental load, like you just touched on, it takes the mental load out of arranging that catch up. So it's a recurring invite. And then what we'll do is, I've just gone ahead and booked a dinner for this Wednesday, a venue. But what we could do is we'll just say, okay, cool, where are we going to go next time? Someone's in charge of booking that and it's done. So I think it sounds counterproductive, but is there a way that we can, to a level, systemize those friendships and that contact time just so it doesn't become another chore? Because I read an article, I think it was in Marie Claire, it was UK Marie Claire late last year, and they were saying that we cancel on the people who are actually going to fill us up. Like, we cancel on our best mate because we've got to work overtime on getting a project together, or, you know, we cancel on our sister. And they're the people who will understand, but they're also the people that would actually fill us up more.
That's what we need the most. Yes.
So that's something I'm trying to focus on. Like, Stacey and I, it's every Tuesday, although actually I say that I had to move it to Thursday this week because I've got tomorrow morning. But, you know, it's systemized. It's in the calendar. That's what's happening. And it just makes it easier for everyone. That's really helped me lately.
Absolutely. And I think it's, if there's a way, even if it's once a week, that you go, yep, it's Wednesday morning that I catch up with these couple of mothers or this one friend, you know, or if it's once a fortnight, whatever it might be, then it takes out that mental load of, oh, when am I going to see them, or how am I going to fit in my social life? It's just there, it's in place. And I think, that's something that myself and some of my other local friends had in place last year. A lot of us would be free on a Friday morning. And so it was just almost, I think we actually had the name of the group chat, which is still there, called Friday Fun. So it was just like, we meet up at the creek on a Friday morning with our kids, but it was, and I refer to that as my therapy
of
just being able to talk with these other women, and we would laugh and make bad jokes, and everyone's children were all doing the same thing. So there was this element of validation with that, and it was hugely recharging to do that. So having a system in place, as clinical as it sounds, it just as you preach better than anyone, Lorraine, it just creates more ease.
Yes,
really. Yeah. So it's having, I think, absolutely. And again, if you think about, coming back to what we're talking about in terms of mindset, we need to have systems in place that are just there, that don't take extra thought every single time, but it's our safety net ultimately. Yes. So when we've got systems and habits, including socializing, in place, then it helps to catch us if stress does come in. We've got these elements in place that catch us from falling through or beyond that safety net.
Yeah, I love that you said that. So do you see a lot of your clients, do you think that they're lonely?
I think absolutely there's a huge element of loneliness. for women. And a part of that too can just be when we get really overwhelmed and that tips into anxiety or depression, a key thing that happens is we withdraw. So it's a little bit of the chicken or the egg situation of, and it then becomes really just self-perpetuating from that. But again, I think it's also a byproduct of what we were saying before of just that, the modern afflictions, so to speak, without our women tribes.
Yeah. Because I can definitely see over the last couple of years, I was definitely very lonely. I think that's probably why I love this community, as online as it is. It's such a gift to be able to connect with other women, but then also to have that in parallel with the women in real life too.
Yes, absolutely. Getting it in different ways is helpful. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh God, I could honestly ask you about a million more. But one I do want to ask is, do you have any tips for people on finding a psychologist?
Great question. I would say if you feel comfortable to ask friends or know of someone who might recommend someone, then start there. Recommendations are great. Mm-hmm. Go to your doctor, GP, and ask for their recommendations, because again, if you've got a GP that you trust, they tend to worked with psychologists themselves and know who's good to refer to. So go to your GP. There's also the Australian Psychological Society, APS. If you Google them online, there's a Find a Psychologist service on there. So you can put in what it is you might be struggling with, your postcode, and it will come up with a range of psychologists that you can kind of sift through.
Brilliant. That's so good. And yes, the tip I would give is that someone I know was referred to a psychologist and was referred to a specific psychologist. So just to explain, so for anyone who's not aware, if you go to your GP and you're having any kind of mindset challenges, anxiety, stress, like Libby has touched on, or adjustment disorder, as we now have a label for adjusting to big life events. If you go and they will essentially do an assessment, they'll give you like a scorecard essentially, where they'll give you a bit of an assessment as to where you're at. And from that, then they will write you a referral for a mental health plan, it's called.
Yeah.
And that mental health plan gives you 10 subsidized sessions with a psychologist for that calendar year, which is just incredible that you can access that. And also, if you've got private health insurance, that can help separately. You can obviously put it both through on the same one. This person that I know who got referred to a psychologist was, head down, that's it, I'm going to do these 10 sessions. And she knew from the first session that she didn't like the psychologist. And there was just they were on, I think the way I would describe it, they were just on a different pace. One was very fast-paced, one was very slow-paced. And this person was just pissed. but they did it because they committed to doing it, and they did the 10 sessions. And
oh, wow.
They really didn't see any improvement. I didn't see any improvement. They didn't either. And so what I was suggesting, if you can, if it's available, what I did, and it was actually my GP who suggested it, she gave me a referral to a practice where there's 9 or 10 psychologists I go to. And she said what happens then is they will match you up with whoever's available.
Yeah.
And then see if there's a fit there after the first session, if you feel like it's just not the personality fit. Because you're really going to be working closely with this person. Like,
oh, yes.
You're probably going to be sharing more with this person than you have with your own parents or your partner.
Absolutely.
So you want to make sure that dynamic is there. It's almost like you're hiring for a team member that you're going to be spending a lot of time with. You want to make sure that fit is there.
Yes.
And that trust is there, and you feel like they're authentic and they've got integrity and all that great stuff. So that was a really great thing, because what she said is that if I went to see the psychologist that the practice matched me up with and it didn't work out, that they could very easily just flick me onto someone else. I didn't have to go back to her and get a whole new referral, which is,
yes,
have to be real. If you've got a kid or a couple of kids, business, you've got a career, like, it's not easy just to find the time to spend 30 minutes waiting to see a doctor. So
no.
That is also a bit of a barrier to entry. Just having to go and get the plan, I think, is a barrier to entry as well. So, yeah, I think that was something I thought was really clever. My GP is amazing.
Yes.
Because
a referral to a group practice. Absolutely.
So if you can, it depends, obviously, if you're more remote or more regional, it might not be as easy to get a practice. But it just letting you guys know that's something that worked really well for me. And I wish that had been available for my friend as well, because she would have just swapped over to another psychologist maybe 2 or 3 sessions in and actually gotten the value for the money and the time she devoted to those 10 sessions.
Absolutely. And I think it's great when you can get a referral to a group practice for for that reason. And also just really, I can appreciate it's time consuming, but it's something that I think it is important to do your research on if you can, in terms of, assessing psychologists in your area, looking at their web pages, even giving them a call, and seeing if they'll be a good fit. And if you do find a psychologist that you like, then take that name to your GP and say, this is the one I want to see. So it really pays to just take a little bit of time of doing some research. And absolutely, sometimes you don't know until you're in there. And if it's not the right fit, I really encourage people to go and seek someone else out, because exactly what you say, it's a lot of time and money to continue to push through with something when it's just, it's not the right fit, and that's completely okay. It's really valuable to find a therapist that is the right fit for you.
Yeah. And let's remember, you want to be able to share and go deep with the person. You're not going to share if you don't trust or like the person, or that you just feel like they're just on a different wavelength to you. You're going to always have a certain defense up. You're not going to get the value from the work. So, yeah, I'm really glad we touched on that. I think that's an important point.
Yes. Absolutely.
Okay, I could speak to you forever. Is there anything you feel like we've missed in terms of supporting people with their mindset?
Like what you say, there's so much we could keep going into. Yeah. But as far as the main themes, I don't think so. I think a practical tip, maybe we spoke a bit about the importance of acknowledging having a relationship with yourself, engaging self-compassion, self-reflection, thought diffusion. With that, there's also thought generation, which is just if we want to feel better, sometimes it helps us to be able to, just the way we talk to ourselves. So we all can generate sentences, which is generating thoughts, and we may not believe it at first, but it's going to put us in a better headspace of feeling better and taking action as well. And so the other key counterpart to that is just value-driven behavior. So again, our anxiety won't shift until we take action to kind of move through that discomfort, if we've got developed the adequate skills to move through that. And also our mood won't lift. Like, we don't get the input of joy or satisfaction if we continue to stay withdrawn. So, and that's what we call in clinical terms, kind of it's behavioral activation. It's so important. So for some people that's exercise, or it's socializing, or it's engaging in knitting, or whatever it is, but it's acknowledging, if your mood is quite low, you know, check in with where your action is at. And, you know, I know we've all heard the quotes before that motivation doesn't come first, but it's true. You know, we have to commit to small actions. I'm a huge fan of incremental steps, but small actions to slowly build that momentum, which builds our motivation and our mood and eases anxiety, which helps us to keep progressing through that. So that would probably be the only other thing I would add into that.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah, it's I know we're not saying fake it till you make it, but it's like if you act in a certain way, you're actually a lot more likely to feel that way. It's like if you do even, I don't even know the stats, but if people say if you smile, like even if it's not, you don't necessarily feel like you have anything to smile about, the physical act of smiling activates all these different amazing things in our bodies, and then all our body is essentially tricked into thinking it's happy and is more likely to be happy. I think that's what you're talking about, but on a grand scale, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just that ability to use forethought in terms of thinking ahead about, okay, if I continue to stay sitting on the couch, how am I going to feel in 3 hours' time? I'm going to still feel pretty shit and potentially worse because I didn't get up and do something. And, you know, it's as you talk about too, Lorraine, it's taking care of our future selves. So we've got that ability. The more we exercise that forethought to go, as much as I don't want to right now and I don't feel like it, I could actually feel a lot better if I go for that walk around the block, or if I call that friend. I don't really feel like it, but I can expect that after doing that, it's going to help me out. So forethought's huge for taking care of ourselves.
Yeah, I love that. And I would just add, and it's interesting because Jack and I had a very similar conversation, the interview we just did for the podcast there. I think it's important for us to be very selective with the people that we do share where we're at, because I think we don't quite know what to say. And also, I know for me, I'm seen as a coper and a doer, and I make shit happen, and I'm very high functioning. Even if things are falling apart, I can still get up there and do the speaking gig if I need to. So I think it's important that we're selective about the people that we actually do bring into the kind of the inner circle about what's actually happening for us.
Yes.
Because I think, I don't want to say people might be ignorant, but they just don't know what to say. They might say, well, what's wrong with you? You've got everything. Like, what's the problem? Mm. Like, this person should be depressed or anxious or stressed, not you. Or there's a million different, and it's just people bringing their own stuff to whatever the situation. Mm. So I would just say be selective about people that you do share where you're at with.
Absolutely.
When you talked about that withdrawal thing, it's funny you say that, because I'm just thinking even about me over the last 2-3 months, I've been so social and I've been enjoying my friends so much. And I look back at for a few months last year and I didn't enjoy spending time with my friends at all because, I wasn't in a good place. But you're right, I withdrew. I actively didn't try to see friends, which then exacerbated the loneliness and the isolation and the getting caught up in my own thoughts. So I said that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll often remind myself of that if I'm getting too stuck in my head, because I try to solve problems by being in my head a lot, and that doesn't always end well. And a good cue for me is like, I need to get out of my head. I need to go and be distracted by nature or talk to someone, not about what's in my head, but just to pull me out of that.
Yeah. I think that's the thing, is I think it's almost one of the, would you say the perils of the trade? If you do own your own business, you probably are in your own quite a bit, particularly in the early days, if you haven't got a team around you and so on.
Absolutely.
We've obviously talked at length. What do you think is the biggest factor that influences mindset, coming from your perspective as a psychologist?
Yeah, I would say I'm a big fan of what I know we're all affected by, which is kind of that previous programming. So it's what I mentioned before about those core beliefs that sit in our subconscious. It drives automatic thoughts, it drives behavioral patterns. We tend to identify with it and just say, that's just who I am. And I would say if we have the ability to acknowledge that those beliefs are stories, we've gotten really attached to them over time and we're actually separate to them. There's personality variables that are hardwired into us, absolutely, and that's a part of us. But then over time, because of early childhood experiences, we've built up these stories on top of that. Mm. And it's those stories that drive behavioral patterns in all different facets of our life that keep us stuck. So I think a huge mindset shift, and it's really empowering when we can start to identify that we're not our stories.
Yes.
And that we can create the life we want, whatever that looks like for us. You know, we can be whoever we want within our limits of personality variables, so to speak. But, you know, we know with research that our brains are highly malleable. There's neuroplasticity that if we focus on developing a certain skill, we can build that up. So it's just understanding that, yeah, we don't have to stick to those limits.
Yeah, I love that. And God, I think we're probably out of time.
Yes.
The whole idea of, yeah, the stories and what we attach to them, I think that's so powerful. Yeah.
Yes.
And I think, yeah, I think in the various different episodes of this season, I think we will be touching on that and the stories that we do tell ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just knowing that, and it's so empowering just when we can remind ourselves that we don't have to keep believing that story. It effectively is a story. We can do things differently.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, well, I think that is the best note ever to end on. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And you know what I love about you, Libby, as well, is that you are your demographic.
Totally.
It's Anthea. I feel like I'm in podcast zone today as I'm recording this, but Anthea, who is she's my naturopath, and she's got an amazing tea brand, and she's just incredible. So I interviewed her about the link between mindset and our health, our well-being, our sleep, our diet, and so on. And something she was saying is that it's so important that we can meet our people where they are. So I think for you, and it's not to say that you couldn't do a brilliant job of coach, you know, supporting a 55-year-old guy as well. But I think the fact that you are you're young, you've got your kids, you're doing the school mom thing, you know, this next week.
Yes.
I feel like it's such a beautiful thing when you're so relatable and you're in there with your client. I think that's really powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's what's really driven my passion to work with other women. And, you know, I'm here at home trying to practice all these tips and strategies I'm handing out to other people as well. So it's really nice. It's a beautiful blend, which I'm super grateful to have.
Love. Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me. And sorry, this is what I was meant to ask. Yeah, if people aren't in Northern New South Wales where you are, can they work with you? Do you do like Zoom or Skype consultations?
Yep, absolutely. I do Zoom or Skype consultations. I am set to be releasing some online courses and ebooks this year. So that will help to make all of that a bit more accessible too. Yeah, but if you head over to the best place to contact me is probably on Instagram as the Women's Psychologist there.
Yeah.
And people can seek me out.
Amazing. Thank you. I'll link into everything in the show notes then as well. So, yeah, you'll be easily tracked down.
Excellent.
Amazing. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Lorraine. Absolute pleasure to join you in this conversation.
Loved it. Thank you so much.
No problem.
So there you have it, myself and Libby's chat. I so hope that you got something out of our conversation. As I said at the outset of this episode, it for me, I think it's a critically important topic for us to talk about psychological support and how accessible and how bloody normal it is to need it at times. So if you would like to connect with Dr. Libby Quinn, you can find her at her website is thewomenspsychologyclinic.com. And as she mentioned, she's based in Northern New South Wales. But she also, as she also mentioned, does remote sessions over Skype and Zoom as well. And you can find her on Instagram. She's at thewomenspsychologist. So that is it for this week's episode. Again, super quick reminder that Step Into You officially closes today, but if you're listening around the end of March, you can still jump on and just catch up over the last few days of March. And yes, I would love to have you on Step Into You. So until next week, which is all your mindset questions answered. So on that topic, if you have any questions, please do send them through. DM on Instagram would be the best, please. Or if you're not on Instagram, you can just drop me a note through my website. You can see the email form on there. And I will be doing I think there's going to be a lot of questions on this episode in the season because I think we've talked about a lot of different topics. So yes, I am all ready for a turbo question answering episode for next week. And as you're listening to this, I won't be recording it until next week. So please do send any questions you have through to me and I will make sure that they're in the mix for me to answer next week. Okay, thank you so much for listening. Much love. Thank you for being part of this week's episode. It was remarkable to have you. I am always keen to hear your thoughts, questions, ideas, and suggestions for future topics for the podcast. So please get in touch on Instagram. My handle is at Lorraine Remarks and through my website, lorrainemurphy.com.au. If you're enjoying what I'm putting out here, please do rate, review, or subscribe to the podcast so more people can find out about it and we can build this special community. Or even better, do all three. Chat to you next week.